topic of this parsha is the mitzvah bal tashchis. The Torah says that when kisotzer al ir, when you're besieging the city, so there's an isser as you're there, there's an isser of destroying the trees. Lo sashchis es etzah. Is a tree like a man that it should be included in the siege? Why is it part of the siege? If you have a tree which is not an Eitz Machol, and you need to cut it down in order to be able to build the siege weapons, they wouldn't transport the weapons with them. They would build them there. So you cut the tree down there, right? So that you needed those trees. You can cut down. Okay. So the Torah has this iser of which is known in the Gemara already is called bal tashkis. Beis lam it means not in the lashon of the Gemara. Bal takiv, bal tashkis. So the Gemara uses that lashon of bal, which means not. You may not destroy. The Gemara takes it and applies it beyond the scenario to trees. It applies it to any item the Gemara talks about. So the question is that a deraisa derabbanan? That's a machlokes rishonim. That halacha, let me take it beyond the scenario of the tree, cutting down a tree, to applying it to any wanton act of destruction, whether item, whatever it might be. That's a machlokes rishonim. Okay, so just want to talk about a little bit the attitude which is here behind the mitzvah of Baal Tashkis. So starting with the Medrash Kehelis. So Medrash Kehelis in the Pasuk Reis Ma'aseh Elokim Kim Yuchal L'Sakein Es Asher Yivsoi. So the Pasuk says that see what Hashem has created, Ma'aseh Elokim, that what God has created, what hath God wrought, right? As the saying goes, right? It was that Bell, mm-hmm. Bell's assistant, and he's able to hear him. What hath God wrought? Right, that's what he said.
Mm-hmm. Is that right? Is that what he said back when he answered the phone? I don't remember.
It was one of the, it was him or Edison somewhere along the way. Anyway, okay. Now, so b'shoah shabur kadosh baruch hu es adam harishon netoloi bechzira al kolonon gan eden. When a Kadosh Baruch Hu created Adam Rishon, he took Adam Rishon and he took him throughout the Gan Eden. Look what a beautiful world I made for you. And I created it for you. Tein daitcha shlota kalkil v'tachir v'seilomi shim shikalta ein mi shisakan acharecha. Don't mess up. If you mess up, there's nobody can fix it. I'm not coming in and cleaning up your mess. So the Russian says, I made it nice, I made it functional, I made it's going to work. If you handle it with care, it's going to last a very long time. You take care of your socks and you put them away, you'll have socks. You don't take care of your socks, you're not going to have socks. Right? So the Russian says, I gave you a world. I gave it and I want it for you to use. I want you to use it. But you have to use it judiciously. So the question which is here is is this to be understood? At what level is this to be understood? Is the point over here that the main focus is man? That man, says the Russian, says, I care about you. The mother bought his child socks. The main point of giving the kid the socks is for the kid. She's not into saying she loves preserving socks. You know, she's going to have a sock museum. Right? That's not her point. The point is that she wants to get, on the other hand, she wants her kid to have socks, which will last for a long time. She says, if you take care of your socks, you'll have socks for a very long time. Right? So the Russian says, listen, I made the world for you. But I want you to know that it's not going to be forever renewable. And therefore, you have to deal with it appropriately. So this way, you'll have a world. So the main message is you. Or is the main message of the Russian, I'm in a nice world, just don't mess it up. Please, tread with care on my property.
Right.
So which way do you understand? And really, the reading of the Medrash lends itself to a little bit to the first way, because the Russian starts off with, I made it for you, but don't mess it up. So, I made it for you, do whatever you want with it. I made it for you, but don't mess it up means because I want you to be able to have it. That would be the simple reading of the Medrash. This Medrash is quoted by many this, the second part, Ten Deshels of Kalkul and Sakharis Elomi, don't mess up my world, is that the Rosh is listening, you know, Chepernish, it's meine Welt, and you're not the owner, you're a visitor here, please do not destroy, do not touch the Sharman, you know, okay, right? So that's one chazal. Next one is Gemara and Shabbos, which fasting for Gemara and Shabbos over here. I didn't mark off where it is on the page. Vomer of Chista, so it's about, what is it, about 10 lines down on the wide lines, middle of the line. The first one of the word is the word Yidei. Vomer of Chista, Haiman de Efshir le lemechel nahama de sari, Volchel de Chiti. So he could eat barley bread. Barley bread is much cheaper than wheat bread. So he could use cheaper resources. He could eat barley bread. And he eats wheat bread. He's wasting. He's wasting resources. He can use the cheaper stuff and he uses the more expensive stuff. That's a waste of resources. Papa, so he could drink beer and he drinks wine instead. They didn't drink water. The general water was not good. There wasn't a camera to drink water. They would drink these because they've been. Well, the bugs is, but they had you know, stuff growing in it. But so the beer, you had a choice between beer and wine. Well, beer is cheaper than wine. So you have a choice between drinking the beer and drinking the wine. So again, the more says Balaam Milsihi, that's not true. That's not correct because Baltashkus the Gufa Adif. But the toll that this idea of eating the inferior items takes a toll on the body. So in other words, let's put this in modern terms. I can go to the health food store and buy very expensive food. Let's say, for the argument's sake, we believe that it's really actually healthier for you. But let's say that's true, right? Or I can go to eat, you know, my Wonder Bread, which that everybody agrees is not healthy for you, right? But it's 99 cents a loaf.
It's filling.
Right, you know, or you could go to the health food store and buy your, you know, the Ezekiel bread for $4.50 a loaf, right? So the Morse says, that you just wasted $3.50. That's baltashkus. Morse says, no, because the mice, the deterioration of the body is also a consideration of baltashkus. Which means the responsibility of baltashkus applies to your body as well, and in the scheme of things, your money versus your body goes first. Okay, so here the Gemara introduces it a third construct, right? So we have two options in the first, looking at the first matter. We had an option is the main point. The Rishon, I made the world for you. But the same with the Moses, I bought socks for you, but I want you to have socks that shall last for a long time. If you take care of the socks, you'll have socks for the rest of the year. I'm not buying you another pair of socks. I can't afford it. That's it. But I want you to have socks. So the main point is not that she wants to preserve socks. Right? The main point is she wants the kid to have socks. So the main point is the person. That's the second version, which says, I have a sock museum, and by the time you finish socks, I want to put the socks in the sock museum. The main point is the socks. You and the socks are equal footed. And now we have a third construct that Be'etzim, you are also something that I care about. It's not you're the...
You're the sock.
What?
You are the sock.
You are the sock. So the point is I have very expensive socks and less expensive socks. You have to be a very expensive sock. So you're the more important sock. But the bottom line is you are treated as an object to some extent. There's a concept of Bersha, the Baal Tashis, do not destroy, including do not destroy yourself, right? So there is definitely a construct, which I got to choose one of my rebellion one time. I'm not very well known for taking care of my health, which is what the Gemara really is saying you should do. And he says it's baltashkus on your goof. Okay. Okay, I'm not saying that I've learned my lesson yet, but you know, we're trying. We are. You don't believe that, but it's true. You should see what I would look like if I wasn't trying. Okay, so that is, I think, the background, the backdrop of this mitzvah about tashkes, which we're told not to destroy the world. What is the point behind that? The point behind that, because the Russian wants to preserve the world for you. But you're the main point. It's all about you. But the Russian says, listen, you know, I mean, use your sacks judiciously. The Russian says, it's a wonderful world over there. Please do not mess up my world. It's his world. Or this middle Madrega, which we're talking about, this combination of the two, somewhere it's not, you're not really the Balabas. It's just, you know, with a warning sign of use it well, but rather you yourself are also a guest. But you're both, everybody's guests, so we have to then figure out how to balance the guests. Okay, that's the backdrop. Now I want to share a piece with you from a Hirsch, which to me is gorgeous. The piece is absolutely gorgeous, but it's a kolistic approach Rav Hirsch has to understand chukim. So normally the construct, which all the Rishonim go with, Chazal already, that the word, the Torah uses the lashon of chayik, it's something which has been chiseled, it's been made a fact. That's the way it is. Why? Because, right? So I'm teaching 5-year-olds, you know, rules in kindergarten, say, listen, children, let's decide what we think is a good idea, and we'll listen, you know, like, I don't ask the 5-year-old their opinions about what's good and what's not good, and we decided based on that. I, as the responsible adult, say, listen, we decided it's not a good idea that the children should run into the street. We think it is a good idea. That's ridiculous. You know, you don't understand the consequences. You don't understand. Russia says, listen, I got a big world out there. You have no idea what it means. It's none of your business, but listen to me. I'm telling you this way it is. Some things make sense to you. Some things make sense to you. I really couldn't care less. Overstating that. Okay. Right? Right? That's how the simple reading of the chayik is. So what's wrong with eating chazer? Because the Rosh said you can't eat chazer. End the conversation. Rehersh approaches the concept of the chukim in a totally different way. We find that the word chayik is used in the Torah to mean something which the person deserves to get. Lechem chukki doesn't mean the gzeiros hakatzon of how much bread you get. It means the portion of the amount that you're supposed to get. Chayik al kahanim, the pasuk says over there that the pharaoh supported the kahanim. It didn't mean there was a gzeiros hakatzon. It means he had set aside a certain amount that they're supposed to get. So there's the word chayik, I mean, it's a totally different meaning. But he says this in context of, he divides all of the mitzvahs in the Torah. In his seminal work, Chorev, he divided all of the Tayyar mitzvahs into 6 categories of mitzvahs. The Mishnah, you find that they saw it as 3, possibly 4. You have the Chukim, and you have the Mishpatim, and then you have the mitzvahs which are, Chukim are not understandable to us, Mishpatim are the Ben Olam Chaveira, and then there are the mitzvahs which are Ben Olam Malkum, but are understandable. Shabbos, those things, we understand what Shabbos is about. It's not a chayik. It's called mitzvahs, it's called edus, different ways of saying it, but it's refers to it into 6. So he wrote a Sefer Chorev. Before he published Chorev, he had already written Chorev when he wrote a small book called The 19 Letters of Ben Uziel. Ben Uziel being the nom de plume that he used to publish it under. And it was 19 letters between this adult speaking to a young man who was grappling with the role of Yiddishkeit in the world, in the modern world, etc. It's not easy. It was written in German, and it was written, you know, in the Germans, you know, the first translation was a straight Germanic translation, you know, to English. So, you know, the joke was about the guy who was, you know, was at the speech, and he left after half an hour, and the guy next to him said, "You can't leave yet." He said, "Why not?" They didn't get to the verb yet, you know. So So that's how it was translated. And there's a lot of quoting of psukim is all written in that, you know, the these and the thous and the what hath, you know, type of stuff. But in his generation, they didn't mind that. It was a bestseller. It was tremendously successful. There was a generation which was, you know, they had not been exposed to Torah. The world is still a big question mark to them. Sherman's went into philosophy anyway, and they read it, and he wrote it being the introduction to then present his work Charev, drawing people into it, which it did very well. So in the letters, in letter number 10, he introduces his six divisions of the mitzvahs, which he builds Charev upon. He already had developed this concept. He had already written Charev. He just hadn't published it yet. So, see, he looks at the so in the page before, he says, whatever you know about Judaism, please discard. Let's start over again. All right? He's doing Kiruv, and he was doing Kiruv before the former Or existed. That's shy such a thing, right? Rav Hirsch was doing Kiruv, you know, these fry German Jews that the Reform had drawn astray. He says, well, everything you know about Judaism, you know, you look here, the guys who know nothing are much better off than the guys who know something, right? Because they have this verkrumte understanding of Yiddishkeit, you know? Yeah. So let's start over again. He divides, the first one is called Toros. So Toros are the historically revealed concepts about God, the character of man and of Israel, and their implications, but not as maxims of faith or philosophy, but as actual principles of living to acknowledge and absorb by the heart or soul. So that's the Torah. This is what it's all about, really. Okay, what's Mishpatim? So Mishpatim, we think we know what it means. He takes it and says it in a very, very beautiful, concise way. Expressions of justice towards beings equal to yourself, based on this principle of equality. Justice towards humans. Okay? That's the Mishpatim. Chukim are expressions of justice towards subordinate beings based on the principle that all things exist in God's service, i.e. justice towards the earth and plants and animals, as well towards your property, your body, your mind, and your heart, which you have to make up yourself. Everything has it's just due. That what it deserves. So that's the chayk that it has. Everybody has its portion that it's supposed to receive, its portion of respect, and to deal with it the way it deserves to be dealt with. The tree has that right as well. The animal has that right as well. The divine order has the way the world, the species are set up. You have to deal with that respectfully. Mitzvahs are precepts of love towards all beings, even though they have no claim to it, predicates of God's bidding, and the meanings of your mission as a man and Israelite. Eidos, Jesus, by word of Samalik Act, to serve for the individual and for Israel and for the world and beyond, as reminders of all the truths that form the basis of the mission of man and Israelite, and avodah is exaltation and sanctification of our inner spiritual life. Okay. So he sees, if the words that he's using to describe these different sections, really, he sees three things. Justice means consideration for every being as a creation of God, for all possessions as having purpose before God, for the natural as being ordained by God, and therefore compliance with the claims that they make on us. They have a claim of deal with me appropriately, whether it's a human being, whether it's an animate object or an inanimate object. It's a conceptually how the world is presented, all of that, Bergman said in a certain way, you have to respect that. So it has a claim upon you. Love means acceptance of all beings as children of God and as our brethren, etc., etc. It's the will of God, and then education. So he sees justice as being one of the foundations of the mitzvahs.
How do you explain paraduma as a chok then?
Okay, so. So now, in the next, this is ready in the next letter, letter number 11. So, he starts off with Torahs, goes to Mishpatim, and then he goes to Chukim. So Torahs then are but a restatement, and I'm looking at the paragraph, page 166, the paragraph which starts with the word, the Torahs then are but a restatement for practical application of the truths that God reveals to us through his deeds. His principle action they are commanded, his ideas they are merely revealed, not imposed upon us. Whoever desires the truth will accept them. There are parts which are tzivuyim, parts which we understand conceptually what we're supposed to do. Mishpatim. All these insights, however, are of value only if you truly live your life according to what you, as man and Israelite in God's world, with your God-given powers, have recognized. First requirement is therefore that you practice justice. Justice means respect every being in your surroundings as well as everything within yourself as a creation of your God. Respect whatever is theirs as given to them by God or as having been acquired according to divinely sanctioned law. Let them keep or have whatever they are entitled to by right to call their own. Do not be a source of harm to others. Respect every human being as your equal. Respect him, his inner self, as well as his outer garment, as his body and his life. His property, too, is a legal extension of his body. So, you see, the Ritzicha, Geneva, all the different things, the Yisrael is respecting his right to exist, etc., the same way you have. Shadda's claim to property or services that you have surrendered to him, the lochas of paying him at the proper time. Probably measured or counted the lochas of, as well as his claim to compensation for harm done to his body or property. He said his right to know the truth and his right to freedom, happiness, peace of mind, honor, and peaceful existence. Never abuse the frailty of his body, mind, or heart, taking advantage of the yosam, the ger, misuse your legal power over him. That's the mishpat. But that's the human being. Chukim, the same justice that you owe to man, should be shown to every lower being, from the earth which bears everything, to vegetation, the animal world, to your own body, your mental powers, your own self, more than anything else you can call yours. The case of Mishpat in the man of justice is based on the equality of all men. Here it derives from the principle that everything belongs to God, who represents its interest against your arbitrariness. So God is going to be the lawyer, as it were, for the animal. You're going to come and try and assert the human power over everything. The person says, no, I'm standing away and saying, that's not you, you're not do that. As much as I created them, they have a right to exist a certain way, you may not. I'm gonna represent them.
For example,
the manners of mishpatim are clearer to you because to a large extent you only need to know your own feelings in order to identify with the feelings of your fellow men. The reason why chukim are not obvious to us is because we relate to mishpatim because we're men. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what a tree needs because I'm not a tree. What does an animal need? I don't know. But the Russian says, I'll tell you what it needs. What do plants need? Plants need to be kept distinct and separate. I would never have thought that because I'm not a plant. So the reason why chukim are not understood to us is not because that they're intrinsically that they're not understandable, is because I'm not looking at it from the right perspective. So, but as much as the point of a chayk is the demand that they have a right to exist the way they deserve to exist, the Rosh was pointing out informing us what that is. Wow. If you have the same knowledge of your body and your mind, the condition for their harmonious interaction, and you were able to put yourself into the place of any other creature, then chukim would be as intelligible as mishpatim. Fascinating thought process. Chukim require us respect for all that exists as God's property. Do not destroy anything, do not misuse it, do not waste, use everything wisely. So you see he's already getting to the midst of the concept. So Baltashkis, he sees as the primary, is this is going to be the banner mitzvah of the chukim. Which, we would not have put Baltashkis under the chukim in the standard usage of the word chuk. Something which is unintelligible. It's very intelligible to us. Mm-hmm. He doesn't see, that's not the point. The point is, that is the whole Yisoid. Everything in the world has a right to be respected. It's a wasted to destroy it. It means you're not respecting it. And the chayk is everything has its chayk, as what it is deserved and supposed to get. Its portion. Respect for all the species, and that you see the constants of climb, etc. The order is established by God. Do not intermingle them. Respect for all creatures, their servants in the houses of creation. Respect for the feelings and instincts of animals, that they serve of Espanoi. Respect for the human body, even if the soul is departed, the locals of how to deal with a mace. Respect for your own body. Maintain it as is a repository, a messenger, and instrument of the spirits, etc. Then he continues this concept, how he puts the rayas under chukim. Okay. So that's the but in the context of Baltashkis, it's a very fascinating construct. So let's see it in Chorei. So the concept he explains in a general sense much more in the 19 letters, but in Chorei he brings out Baltashkis more directly. So in the next page is from the Chorei. So Chukim, laws of righteousness towards those beings which are subordinate to man. The next page. Towards earth, plant, animal, towards one owns body, mind, spirit, and word. Okay. So this is the section number four of Chorei. So the first mitzvah in that is Baltashkis. Respecting all beings as God's property. So he quotes the psukim, which the way he does it in his the translation follows the more archaic translation. If you can make the see that maketh war with thee, thou mayest. Okay, fine. So the oral law. Explain this as follows. Though you are laying siege to a city, and you are thus about to do harm to man, and therefore certainly need not respect the property belonging to man's personality more than if I can kill the guy, I cut out his tree, right? That'd be the logical thought process. Nevertheless, you may not destroy this property without reason or purpose. If you have to cut down trees, be wise in your choice. Do not cut down fruit trees for the purpose of wood when you have timber trees at your disposal. As the trunk of the former has a higher purpose to fulfill, it can produce fruits, while the latter is given you for the purpose of wood. And from this you hear the warning of God, do not destroy anything. And apply it to your whole life and everything being which is subordinate to you, from the earth which bears you them all, up to the garment which you have already transformed into your own cover. Everything you have to respect, and don't wantonly misuse it. So ye, yes, it is true. Do not destroy anything. I have no idea how to pronounce that word. Yeah, ye. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right? Whatever. It doesn't mean the colloquial usage that it says, yes, it is so. It's like an announcement. Do not destroy anything is the first and most general call of God, which comes to you, man, when you realize yourself as master of the earth. So you're about to take over the world. Person says, one second. Hello, I got a message for you. All around you perceive earth and plant and animal. Earth and plant and animal already bearing your imprint from your tactical human skill. They have been transformed by your human hand for your human purposes. Dwelling place and clothing, food and instruments. You've taken them as your property. Thus you stand in the midst of your earthly kingdom. And they are all servants of your mites. Right? Sounds like man is the pinnacle of creation. If you should now raise your hand to play a childish game, to indulge in senseless rage, which should destroy that which you should only use, which should exterminate that which you should only exploit. You should regard the beings beneath you as being objects without rights, not perceiving God who created them, and therefore a desire that they fill the mind of your presumptuous mood, instead of using them only for the means of wise human activity. Like this is all, remember, this is all one sentence. Right? Then God's call proclaims to you, do not destroy anything. Be a man. Only if you use things around you for wise human purposes, sanctified by the words of my teaching, only then are you a man and have the right over them to which I have given you as a man. However, if you destroy, if you ruin, at the moment you're not a man, you are an animal. You have the right to the things around you. I lent them to you for wise use only. Never forget that I lent them to you. As soon as you use them unwisely, be it the greatest or the smallest, you commit treachery against my world. You commit murder and robbery against me, my property. You sin against me. This is what God calls up unto you, and with this call he does represent the greatest and smallest against you, and grants the smallest is also the greatest a right against your presumptuousness. See, he's their advocate. It's an awesome understanding of Baltashkis. He takes Baltashkis and makes it like one of the primary yesodas of Kol Tarkula. Okay? Now he takes the next step and he takes even weiter. Therefore, the sages say, he who in his wrath tears his clothes, breaks his vessels to pieces, or scatters his money, should be in your eyes as one who has worshipped idols. This is still the quote of the Gemara. For thus is the way, this is the way of passion of the Yetzer Hara. Today it says, do this, tomorrow it says, do that, till it also leads him who has become its slave to idol worship. Okay, that's the quote of the Gemara. Now, what's the pshat in the Gemara? So the pshat in the Gemara is like this. The Gemara says that the guy did something which is minimal of error. It's not in the scale of 1 to 100. It's a 2. But that's a, yeah, the Yetzer Hara starts with, you know, small, and he builds you up. So eventually he puts exception to Avodah Zarah. That's pshat in the Gemara. But a person is bothered by that. So based on that system, any of error is Avodah Zarah. Because, like, you know, he starts off with, you know, not putting on tefillin. Next thing you know, you're doing Avodah Zarah. Like, you know, he starts with Lashon Hara. Next thing you know, it's Avodah Zarah. Like, you know, I mean, if that, the Morris point is, Yetzer Hara gets his foot in the door, and who knows where he's going to lead you. So why is this, what's the connection to Avodah Zarah per se, specifically over here? So that's not the pshat in the Gemara. You know, the Morris is saying, yes, we're starting with something which seems to be insignificant, and eventually you're going to do one of the worst of errors in the Torah. But it's not this idea of bad life leads to terrible consequences. It's something more than that. And in truth, there's no one nearer to idolatry than he who can disregard the fact that things are the creatures of property of God. Avodah Zarah is when you take God off the pedestal and you put something else instead. And the worst of Avodah Zarah is when you put yourself instead. Mm-hmm. That's what God just did. The owner has a right to destroy. A person who is a visitor, a person who is a borrower, a person who is a renter, has a right to use, not to destroy. When you're destroying, you're saying you're the owner. Ah, that's, you're well enjoying Avodah Zarah. It means God's not the boss of the world anymore. I am. And therefore, that person presumes also to have the right, since he has the might to destroy them according to his presumptuous will. Yes, he's already serving the most powerful idol in his inner self, anger, pride, above all his ego, which in his passion regards itself as the master of all things. So you're on the way to be an Avodah Zarah, the worst Avodah Zarah that there is. Then he goes to starts going through some of the halachic elements of it. Okay. So he just took Baltashkis and said, "You saw that Baltashkis is a Avodah Zarah." Like, you know, it's like wow, you know, your mother said, "You eat all of your food with Baltashkis," right? You just realize you didn't listen to her, you did a Avodah Zarah. No, that's not true. Because the reason why that line that your mother said, if she said that, is not correct. Because if you're forcing yourself to eat, it's not good for your body. That's Baltashkis the Gufadiv. So the correct response of a knowledgeable child.
I mean, modern Baltashkis.
I hold that I'm not hungry anymore, and if it's not good, and not healthy, so it's Baltashkis the Gufadiv. Now,
if you order too much lechatchila without thinking, then it's Baltashkis.
Okay, that's you have to figure that out.
To say, but the shmorg and you can't eat it.
Right.
And if your neighbor can't eat it, that's what you took it.
But his construct on how chukim work, his understanding of Baltashkis, it's revolutionary, but it's awesome. It's such a phenomenal insight into what the Rosh is doing in Baltashkis. He's saying that there's a world out there which belongs to me. That's the word Shabbos. It's not your world. So where Hershel would be looking at that medrash, Rosh says, "Listen, I created the world because I love you and I want to give you a nice place to live. But I also care about everything else which is there. And I'm happy you should use it as long as it's good for you. But to stop waste it, to destroy it, mehechatesi. That wasn't part of the deal." And that's what the Medrash would be saying. And then he says, as he builds his chukim, he talks about the halachas of taking care of your body, not putting yourself in sakana, etc., is also part of the chukim. Because your body deserves to be protected from you. Right, in a certain sense. Your body, the same way the tree has a claim on you, don't abuse me, don't destroy me, don't waste me. Right? Your body has that same also. So the human body after death has that claim as well. There's a certain respect that we need to have for this, and we have to treat it with the halachas of how you, the mitzvah of Koras Mason. But it says, if that's true with Lachar Misa, it's true B'chayev as well. So he puts the halachas of Kavura into the halachas of which is also in the Sefer Parsha, right? He puts it into the halachas of Chukim, but not Chukim, it's unintelligible. It says, if we could hear our body talking, the same way we can hear the plant talking, we can hear our body talking, the body has a claim on us. Even the body of one who passed away has a claim on us. You need to respect me. And the way you treat it like that. So somebody asks, what's wrong with cremation? Cremation is the assumption that the body has no claim. I can burn it, destroy it. The same way I don't destroy a tree, I don't destroy a body. So the tree, if I have a valid usage for human usage, that the Torah tells me that's mutter. But to wantonly destroy it, right? So they're arguing, well, the valid usage because it's taking up all the space in the ground. You know, it doesn't want to take up that much space on the ground, right? There's a lot of land in America, but there's more land studies, you know, research. There's more land in America being used by parking lots for malls than there are for cemeteries.
Really?
So if we're really worried about this land issue, we should, you know, get rid of some, you know, shopping malls. Well, Tyson, if you enjoy shopping malls, we don't care about, you don't enjoy cemeteries. So then the issue is not land. The issue is, you know, what you enjoy. You know, there is a solution to combine the two. There's a famous apocryphal story about the woman who requested that she should be cremated and she'd have her ashes sprinkled over on the Walmart. Over the Walmart. So they asked her why. She says, my daughter will visit me this way.
Ouch.
Yeah. The story is probably apocryphal, but the message is valid. You have to make sure you're just careful what in what company you say that story. Okay, the next two pages I'm not going to get involved in. It just goes through the halakhas of wind. Baltashis is much of the page after that is the Gemara that he quoted. The Morin Shabbos that he quoted about goes to that this. Let's just see the lush on the Gemara inside. So it's on Shabbos Kufayim and Beis, three lines before the end of the narrow lines. The third line before the end of the narrow lines. But Tanya Reb Shimon bar Elazar Omer Mishum Chilfa bar Agra, Shama Mishum Reb Yochanan ben Nuri, Mekreag Begadav Bechamos, a person who rips, tears clothing in his anger. Meshaber Kalim Bechamos, he breaks Kalim in his anger. Mefazim Oysa Bechamos, he throws away money. You should consider him comparable to an Oymed of a Nazar. Shekach umlosos yetzar, that's how yetzar works. Yomer umloy asekach, lamoch umloy asekach, ad shomer loy of a Nazar, behalach va'oyvet. So that's the quote that the verse is quoting. That's Lashon of the Gemara. So he calls it passion, is his translation over there. The yetzar is there because at the end with the question, why, if the point is you start small, you walk big, why specifically these three things? About destruction. Okay, comes the Rabbeinu Yarn on the next page, and there's an awesome Rabbeinu Yarn over here. The Rabbeinu Yarn, Shari Tshuva, the word Shar in the lush of the Gemara, Baba Rishana, Baba Kama, Baba Vitsi, Baba Vasa, Baba means a gate, Baba means a section. They would use Baba to be, so the Rishonim used the word Shar, they meant the section. So it's not the gates of repentance. The same way you call Baba Kama the gate of the first gate. It doesn't mean the first gate, it means the first section. So I once heard from Rabbi Foyer, he suggested to why talk of the Chazal use Lashon Baba for this. It's not really, you know, they could have used some other type of Lashon. And it was a usage which was normalized for Chazal, but why did they choose that Lashon? So he wanted to suggest the following. It's not, I'm not sure it's, he might have seen it somewhere, he might have suggested it himself. This is totally an aside. But the Mor says that Baba Ben Buta, the Mor said, head of the first parak says that Baba Ben Buta, we have to remember Baba Ben Buta Latoyv. Why? Because smicha was required to have a Sanhedrin. A bona fide halachic Sanhedrin requires the smicha, which went back to Moshe Rabbeinu. The Romans recognized the fact that if they would remove the Sanhedrin and you wouldn't have this authority of Sanhedrin, they had much more ability to conquer the Jews. So they outlawed smicha. Penalty of death. To the one who gave the smicha, to one who received the smicha, to the city where the smicha took place, right? They're ruthless in this point. So Morris says that the Sanhedrin was going to be lost. So Baba Ben Buta took Rabbi Kiva's 5 Talmidim out to a place which was equidistant between multiple cities, which they felt they were not going to destroy all the cities. It would be bad for them to kill out all these cities. In a place which like a narrow pass, so the Romans would come, he could block them and they could get away. And he gave smicha to 5 Rabbi Kiva's Talmidim. The Romans heard about it and they came, and he told them to run. They ran away, and he blocked them, and he was killed by the Romans. But they were able to get away, and that's how we have smicha continuing in Klal Yisrael. So he says, "Osh Ishu be zochel l'toyv." How is he zochel l'toyv? His name was Baba Ben Buta. So the Masechtas would deal with all the dini mamonos, which is an edrim that was the greatest expression of the halachas of Sanhedrin, right? Or called Baba. That's what he suggested. I don't know. Shout out based on this. It's definitely an interesting thought, right? The Mor says a story about him in the dorm. The one time he was saying shir, and the woman came over and banged his head with a candle. So he asked her, like, "What was that about?" this woman was Amelia Bedelia, okay?
What?
Amelia Bedelia, right? So she was from Marava, and her husband was from Eretz Yisrael. She was from Marava, her husband was from Eretz Yisrael. They didn't really communicate so well. So suddenly he asked to do something, and she brought him the wrong thing, because they colloquially, the dialects. So he just got so upset, he said, "Take this." She brought him, he asked, whatever, she brought him candlesticks. He said, "Take the candlesticks and go break him on the gate, on the Baba." So she didn't understand what he meant by the Baba. She went to her Baba and Buddha. She popped him on the head with the candlesticks, you know. She says, "Ah, you're Mekayim, the Ratzon of your husband. That's the Ishak Sheira. You should be Zechut to have 2 children which will enlighten Klal Yisrael." Like the light of the candlesticks. So he was quite a tzaddik of Yid, you know. And I would not have reacted with such equanimity, you know, like, you know, I got attacked by this woman. She went, "Oh, that was so nice of you. This is your husband." Like, you know. Okay. The Ben Yona in Shari Tshuva. The point I'm saying is that it's Shari Tshuva, there's divided into four sections. So the 4 sections of Shari Tshuva, he talks about Tshuva. So first section, he defines what is Tshuva. He goes through what he sees are the primary elements of tshuva. He has 20 elements, which are the primary elements. He agrees that there's 3 basic ones. Yeshua, there's 2 basic ones. And then there's another 18, which he feels are important to understand the process of tshuva. Good. The second section, he deals with what motivates people to do tshuva. Why should you do tshuva? So what is tshuva is the first section. Second section is why should you do tshuva? And he goes through 6 things which motivate people to do tshuva. Yamin Arayim, the Yamamavis. The person gets Yisurim, he goes to, you know, he hears from the Navi, goes to the different things that motivated a person to do tshuva. The third section, which is the largest, he goes to what he got to do tshuva about. Like, what are the problems? And his goal is the following, to take things which people perceive as being inconsequential and pointing out how significant they are. So, you know, it's only an asay. So he talks about how important an asay is, and he goes to some examples of that. It's only a drabanan. He talks about all the chazals, how important drabanans are. You know, it's only a lois asay shem ramaisa. You know, so he goes through those type of things. That's the goal of the shar. And the fourth shar is about kapora. How can you get a kapora? So So in the Shar Shlishi, he builds from he starts off with the Rabbanans, he goes to Asay, then he goes to Lav Shein Bar Maisa, he goes to Lav Sheyesh Bar Maisa, he builds up to Chiyav Mitzvah Shemayim, Chiyav Kardes, Mrs. Bezdin, then he has the group which are not Mekal Pnei Shechina, that their punishment is in the world to come, more than the world over here, etc. So in Ois Pei Beis, Lasasha is selling the Dechel of Garza. And he said, this is a mitzvah which is not so well known, the applications are not so well known, I'm going to point it out. Is called you cannot destroy a fruit tree. Gam, leave this by Matsur, even if you need it for your siege weapons. Calls man, shimotze eloni srak, desipuka. As long as you can get trees which are srak, which means that they don't produce fruit. There's timber trees. V'chein huzarnu bazet. So this mitzvah, furthermore, requires us. So the father, mom, and the reek, I feel the shabbat. You cannot ever waste even pruta. Rabbi says the more becomes a makrei al meisu yersim idai loike. The person tears the beged more than necessary, creating greater damage than is necessary for the mitzvah. Is chai malchus for baltashkus. Number one, hishkis moment. Number two, hishlis kasa lavir al divrei Torah. He allowed his anger to overpower him, and then he did something with what he shouldn't do. He destroyed something. And then kimiata yeshimay mokama miyetsar hakas lavir al dosa. That he, once you give into that, this feeling of kas, who knows where it's going to lead you. Okay, and then he goes off and discuss that point for a little bit. He quotes the Gemara in Shabbos. Okay, then the next page in the line 3. If Rabbi says on the bracha, lo yishpach adam meboro v'acherim sichem lo. You have water, you drew the water from the well, from the bore. You used all that you need. You got an extra container of water. So what do they do? They throw it out. Somebody else could use it. Why are you throwing it out? You can't damage your body by endangering it. So I don't think necessarily, you know, skydiving would be mutter according to him. So the act of, even if it's not just a question of fasting, but the sitting and mourning too much wears away the body. All this is baltashkus in his world. But he says you can't waste it. So he's going like Gemara. So I can buy my wonder bread with a heksher, whatever, right? Wonder bread has a heksher? I have no idea. When I was a kid, Wonder Bread was
not kosher.
Was not kosher, but I didn't know that.
Similar bread you can get today.
What?
There's similar bread you can get there. Okay.
Right. So cheap. Right. It's nice and fluffy, like a pillow, and it's all
right.
It's garnished, you know. Right. At best, right. Fills you up, maybe. And I remember as a kid, I used to get like, you know, like 8 slices of it, you know, like. You know, But
air.
What?
And I always wanted to have Wonder Bread.
Yeah, it was no click. So for a cheaper, and I the more says I spend more money, it's called baltashkas. The more saying overspending is called baltashkas. And the more says, yeah, but it's worth it because it's so now. The application of the mice of this becomes very uncomfortable. I could walk; it's cheaper than driving the car.
Right.
Well, there's okay, but you know, the less wear and tear on the body. Okay, that's when I need to go somewhere. I just want to go for a ride. What's that? Why is that? That's wasting money. Mm-hmm. Well, I need emotionally, I need mental health. My mental health day, I need to go for a ride. Okay, so, you know, mental health is this catch-all which catches everything. But he's putting it on the table. Now, if we would, David and I were talking about this, is, you know, if you take this to the full extent, you're going to become neurotic.
You'd go mad.
You'd be neurotic. You know, I could buy the tomatoes at 59 cents, right? But if I go down the three stores down, I can get them at 49 cents. So I'm not allowed to do that. It's an issur d'oraisa. It's not a shiloh, you know, I prefer or not prefer. It's an issur d'oraisa. Tircha doesn't count. You know, you know.
It's about a zara, we said, right?
It's about a zara already, even like, you know. Like
from a zara, you go across the street to the cheapest star.
Right, you know, like, it's like, it's going to be neurotic. I mean, mama's neurotic. You know? So we say, the answer is, it's to some extent, it's based on society. What's normal in your society? Right? So if I'm living in, you know, the Congo, and the average range of what a person earns in a day, in a week, is what America they earn in an hour, right? And the way people consume, the consumption is different. So I keep the what's normal in my society. I have a right. I don't have to go under that. That's considered a pressure which would be unsustainable for mental health. Right, but in my society where I live, what's normal? So, I mean, I would advocate that I think that, you know, there's a tremendous amount of damage which is taking place to the environment, but all these extra things that they have. So I think we should get rid of all the computers, because the rare earth minerals that they're mining is like, you know, it's tremendous damage to the human beings which are involved in it, etc., etc., etc. All smartphones and computers should be gotten rid of. Because Baltashkas, I mean, you're destroying the world. Right? Most Greenpeace activists are not ready to get rid of their computers and their smartphones, because that's what society is normal. So they agree that everybody agrees that we're going to draw a line somewhere. What's sustainable and what's livable, etc. Yeah, you got a few yechidim which are like mamas, like, you know, the city of Musa'ilim, you know, they live off the grid, you know.
Survivalists.
You know, like a survivalist, you know, somewhere in, you know, in the Yukon territory, you know, like, you know, but my average Greenpeace activist is not ready to do that yet either. So he's not Congress at Sadiq either. He's a reform, he's a reform, you know. So where you draw the line is very hard, but the concept that wasting money is wasting resources that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you. And we don't have a right to do that. And if we do that, we're misunderstanding what it means, my relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu and the Bria. The property is not mine. The person gave it to me, and he gave it to me to use, that I should be healthy, my mental health, etc. is included. But Stam, you know, just blowing money would be problematic. So, just I put a Sefer Chinuch over here, and we'll get finished with that. So, submits a Tovkuf Chavtes. He says, "Not only Hinichas Elonis Kinotzal Ir Kedei LaHotzer LaAnshe here. We cannot destroy the trees just to create. Imagine you live in the city and you planted these beautiful vineyards and beautiful orchards. You stand in the city outside, you look out, and they're just ripping everything and destroying it." It's lahachiv libayson. You want to cause. You're not destroying because you need them. You're just destroying because you want to. That's part of how you. The warfare includes just destruction of the property. That's the reason that you can't do. Okay. You shouldn't destroy things. The least for the cry bagger the shabbat cleave the batola. Okay. Fine. Now, next paragraph. Sure, the mitzvah you do. Shukrei lalami. The lesson of this mitzvah is the Russian gave this mitzvah kedei lalami lenafshenu. It's an educational mitzvah. By being careful with this, we're teaching ourselves a lesson. Laov hatoyv vatoelus lidavik boy. It teaches us to appreciate what's that which is good. So the tidavik bano hatoyv benarchim mikol davar ra mikol davar hashchasa. Destruction is a bad meter. Zeldercha chasidim, manche meisa, oivim shalom, smechim, betoy, bebrios, umakarim, usam latara, lo yavda fila gargash al chardal ba'erlam. They can't, they're not comfortable with the true chasid appreciates what he has. So, how can you destroy it? He sees the toiv which is there. He sees the. I see the beautiful tree. Why are you destroying it? I see the beautiful says world, the ecology that we see. I don't want to damage it. I appreciate it. So I can't step in an ant because why are you killing an ant? They find pain in seeing any destruction. If they can save it, they're going to save it. But the Rishoyim are not like that. The Rishoyim are the kindred spirits to the people who enjoy destruction. Well, if that's how you deal with the world, Moshe says, the way you deal will be dealt with you. See, we don't relate to it, but the people that just they enjoy the destruction. Why? Because
it's geschmack.
The act of there's a mice with the Yosef Leib, the Meryl Bloch, Rabbi Elimeir's father. He says that part of a person's avodah is to be honest with himself. Okay. So he said he was walking by. He had his walking stick, you know, right? And there was the person who was a potterer, and he had all these pots out there. He says, "You don't think I understand the geschmack of taking my stick and breaking everything? I understand there's a timer for that, but I control myself." That was a comment that he said.
I remember when I was a little kid, my friend had a little back garage. It was like a decrepit little structure. And there was an old car, broken down car inside of there. There was nothing more geschmack than chucking rocks through there and watch this glass smash. And it was totally legal, like nobody cared. It was pretty much so. Right.
You know how much that car's worth now?
Nothing, because I broke it. That was such a geschmack. You just let loose and just, you know.
Right. There's a certain hanoah of destruction. It says that hanoah is part of the world of the Russia.
That makes sense.
And the chosid, in other words, that midah is this midah of the animal element of the human being. There's no logic behind it. It's just might and power letting itself out. And the chosid says, "This is a beautiful world. Like I'm just like in awe of it. Like why, I don't want to touch it. I just appreciate all the beauty which is there." Right. So everything which is there, he sees there's some benefit to it, etc. So I think the famous maisa that the Chavos Lubavitch brings, that once the Chassid was talking about, he talked about the idea of not speaking negatively. So once when he told the Chassid, means these people who were at this high spiritual level was walking with his Talmidim, and they passed by a carcass, and one of the Talmidim said, you know, it smelled, you know, significantly putrid. So he said, it has white teeth. Look how white his teeth are. In other words, you're focusing on, you just don't talk like that. You don't talk about naked. Right? You see that, right? So, whenever we drive, and we see like one of these cars, you know, roadkill, you know, some of the cars, ooh! I say, white teeth! Like, that's the standard line of the car. You know, like, ah, will you stop it? You know.
Yeah, exactly.
They already used it already. Like, at this point in time, it's like, you know, it's part of the joke already, you know. Or some of my wife will beat me to it and says, white teeth! You know, like, okay, yeah. Once in a while, she does it to me also. Like, and I make a comment, she says, white teeth, you know. But this nakuda of. So the chinuch. Sees again, Baal Tashkis as a very broad-based mitzvah. You know, the Gemara says that the tzaddikim amonim tzchom yel yosem gufam. That's what Chazal was saying. That everything is appreciated. So I'm not comfortable just wasting it. So I forgot something. I'm going to go back for it. It's minimal worth, but yeah, but I'm going to go back for it because like everything is precious. Tell you a cute story. I got another stop. So there was a yid in Detroit. The name is Shmuel Kaufman, Zichron Livracha. A tremendous person. His emunah mitachon HaKadosh Baruch Hu were like beyond. He was a Rabbi Yaakov Yosef Herman's anacle. And a lot of the stories you read about Rabbi Yaakov Yosef Herman fit him perfectly. Like, not a spall from the rest of the world. He couldn't care less what they think. I'm going to do the right thing. He was macabre a lot of people because he had such, you know, strength of his conviction, and it came across, and he was very, there was no airs to him. He was funny, he was cute, you know. He didn't pretend to be what he wasn't. Like, he was a Rebbe for many years. He was a Mishnudaka Rebbe. I don't know, he got the kids into learning. I remember he brought the eighth grade boys. He brought them, it was eighth grade, I think. He brought them, eighth grade, to tell us for a Shabbos. Sunday morning by breakfast table, I walked by and I saw the boys were arguing amongst themselves about Pshat Matosis. Eighth graders. And they were like, going at it back and forth, like eighth graders by breakfast. That's how, what type of Rebbe he was. But like,
Detroit.
He was in the basement.
Was he Nifter?
He was Nifter recently. I mean, he had been a Rebbe for a while. He wasn't well, but he was Nifter within the last five years. One cute story, like, there was a problem with food in the classrooms, with ants, etc. He had a big cup of coffee every morning, you know. Like, I made a rule, no more, food in the classroom. He didn't stop, you know. He'd have a cup of coffee. Like, he wasn't his fault. He wasn't his fault from the principal either. I mean, the principal wouldn't check with him because he knew, but he just kept it in the drawer. So when the principal would come in, he would shut the drawer. Of course, one time he did it too strong, and it started spilling out through the bottom of the desk. The principal comes in, he tells me, and there's coffee pouring all over the place, and I'm just waiting for the principal, please not let me look downwards and notice this big puddle of coffee in the bottom. It's like, oh. But he wouldn't waste money. When he would go to the airport, he says he would send the kids to look for the pay phones for the see if there's any coins there left. Because the rich is a bar mitzvah. Like, I everybody looks like, you're cheap, El Cheapo, there's no mitzvah to waste money. There's money available, take it, like, use it for yid. He was in New York, he would never take the battery tunnel from Brooklyn to Manhattan. I'm not going to pay the toll for. I can go over the Brooklyn Bridge for free. I'm not going to pay a toll and go through the battery tunnel. I'm not going to give the New York City money. Like, I have better things with my money than give it to New York City. Like, that was his attitude. I have better things to do with the money. So I'll just tell you a really cute story. So his in-law, his wife was from Lower East Side. He was very close to Moshe Zatzal, very close to Moshe. They were living in Detroit, and obviously getting back and forth was expensive, etc. So when New York Air first started their flights, remember New York Air?
Yeah.
What?
Sure do.
Okay, so New York Air had a promotional. The flights, they were like these cheap El Cheapo flights, The flights were from, the promotional flights from Detroit to New York were $19 one way.
Wow. Yeah, I remember.
All right, they were like mom or something, but it was like, what?
$29 to New York.
So he said the first flight was 19 cents. As a promotion, the first flight was 19 cents. So he comes home, he says, his wife's name is Risha. He says, Risha, we're going to visit your mother. 19 cents. She says, Shmuel, you realize like the whole city and their cousin's going to be there waiting for this line. You're not going to get on that plane. He says, Risha, we're getting on the plane. Uh-huh. Let's go. We get to the place. There's like three, like hundreds of people waiting over there. She says, "Let's go home." He says, "Are you sure we're getting on the plane?" Good. They're waiting for the flight. They make an announcement that the plane is delayed. Meanwhile, like everybody's trying to, get fine. Again, it's delayed. There's mechanical issues.
Everyone leaves.
So he says, "This big guy gets up and he says." Says they take you up, but they don't take you down. Says I'm not going on that plane unless there's a man of the cloth on the plane. Where he comes and says, "I'm a rabbi." They pull him up to the front. They put him on the plane. And they paid his ticket. Also, it was so really cough. It was horrible. That was him. Like, he could not. You can save money. It's not like he wasn't cheap. When he came to doing mitzvahs, he came to spending on people. He spent like Shlomo Melech. But stop to waste money when you can hold out. It's valuable. It's a vehicle. We don't hoard money. Right? We use it for good things.
Like pancakes.
Right? You don't like hoarding pancakes, right? You know, money is meant to be spent, but it's meant to be spent wisely. And that's the way he was. It was like, you know, he was, I can tell you, he was like, he was one of a kind.